Hey there, welcome to the Student to CEO podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Mason. We're talking to entrepreneurs who launched their business at a young age and they're now killing the game. Tune in to our episodes as these guests spill the dirt on taking that leap into entrepreneurship just like they did. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Student to CEO podcast. I'm excited to have James Mulvaney joining us today. James is a serial entrepreneur and the founder of Radio.co, Podcast.co, and Matchmaker.fm. An expert in the online media / broadcasting and content spaces, James is passionate about helping brands and entrepreneurs use audio to grow. James, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Ashley. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I'd love if you could first start off by sharing with our listeners what you do and what led you there.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I have a few different ventures at the moment, which I'm a custodian of, which is podcast.co, which is a podcasting platform, radio.co, which is a live streaming platform for the radio and broadcast industry. And then more recently, we launched matchmaker.fm, which is a platform to connect podcasters and guests.
Perfect. And so what made you want to get started in the whole audio and content space with all three of these?
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting, I like the fact that this is called Student to CEO, because that's kind of really my journey summed up. When I was, you know, really young, I was like 16, 17. I kind of my interest in the broadcasting and audio world was sparked really because I wanted to go into radio as a DJ. And, you know, I've always loved music. I always used to like listening to the radio when I was growing up. And I just think it's such a great medium. This was like 15 years ago now. So, you know, I sort of started getting work experience and maybe looking at going down that as a career path. But at the same time, I was also really a bit of a nerdy kid. So I was kind of in my bedroom, I was learning to code and learning how to build websites. And I've always had that sort of passion for, you know, hustle and making money. So I kind of wanted to go, you know, I was exploring different ways I could actually make money online. And, you know, I went off to university, decided sort of against going into radio as a career. But what I did learn enough about whilst I was kind of getting that experience in the industry is how to actually broadcast online. And I thought, you know, there was a few companies providing it. And I thought, well, I could do that. I can kind of do some bits better. So whilst I was at university, I kind of used that period, that sort of 4 years, to really grow the business to something that was sustainable and would then kind of lead to a career after I graduated.
Perfect. And so when you were in university and learning how to broadcast online, which venture was that one?
Yeah, so I had a business called Wave Streaming, which was, you know, selling streaming media services to what you'd imagine to be traditional radio stations, TV stations, that kind of thing. But we then pivoted about 5 years ago to create more of a kind of platform, because now our clients aren't just radio stations as you'd imagine them, but there's lots of innovative new startups coming into the space. And we also have lots of brands use our software, everything from football clubs to live music venues. They want to use radio as a way of communicating, connecting with their audience. So that's kind of where we've gone. And then obviously more recently gone into the podcasting space because it's moving so quickly. It's a really exciting place to be. And I think it's kind of almost like an evolution of radio in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really interesting that you focus on both radio and podcasting, because those are two different things, but things that are still really important in terms of establishing yourself as an expert and getting that brand awareness. So do you find that people tend to fall more to one rather than the other, or are they kind of both even in terms of popularity?
Well, I think, you know, our radio business has been established for 5 years, so it's very successful. We have about 5,000 clients now. So, you know, with podcast.co, we've only been around for about a year. So obviously things are still growing. We're still in that kind of startup phase. But I think the popularity of radio has really gone from strength to strength over the last sort of 50 years. If you think about it, when TV first came around, everyone was saying that radio was going to end and it didn't. So I think it's still and always will be a really strong medium. I think there's a time and a place people listen to radio and a time and a place people listen to podcasts. I think in terms of consumer behavior, I think podcasts are more of an intimate thing and radio is something that you can just have on in the background. So interestingly, during this kind of lockdown phase, we've seen a big hike in listener traffic to our clients' radio stations because people want that one-to-one connection. They want that sort of feeling that, you know, someone else is on the other end of the line, so to speak. So you've you've got that kind of personal connection. I think with podcasting, it's more people that you use podcasts as a way to fill time. So it might be while they're going to work, you know, commuting. It could be when they're in a gym or going for a run, or, you know, cooking a meal or doing housework or whatever it might be. So I think there's kind of different modals of kind of engagement people use when they're listening to both radio and podcasting. But, you know, ultimately, for someone who's looking to grow their personal brand or, you know, engage with an audience, I think podcasting is a safer bet, really.
Yes, definitely. And podcasting, as I'm sure you know, is so much fun.
Absolutely.
So James, what was the most difficult part of starting your business while young?
I think the difficult part was starting from nothing. You know, I didn't have venture capital, you know, money. I didn't really have, you know, anything when I started out apart from just my computer. And I think that that's kind of a big challenge in itself, getting to the level where, you know, it's fine to kind of grow it to a position where, you know, you can earn a living from it yourself. But then if you want to start growing further than that, how do you take it to the next step? How do you grow it to a point where, you know, you've got enough income that you can start recruiting staff, you know, to further aid your growth and assist you with kind of the day-to-day runnings of the business? That's what I found challenging. I think, you know, I got to a point where I was earning a living quite quickly, probably within like the first couple of years of starting my first kind of business, quote unquote, website, you know, whatever you want to call it. But then scaling it to a point where, you know, it was making enough money that I could then hire others, was probably what was challenging back then.
Yeah. And scaling, I feel like, is something that a lot of people struggle with. And so what is one thing that you found that helped you to be able to scale your business and get to that point?
I think you've got to identify what you're really good at and what maybe you spend a lot of time doing, but actually maybe you're not good at. For me, I was kind of juggling a lot of things. I was building websites. I was writing code like for the product itself. So I learned a little bit to code when I was young, but never was very good at that. So when I started hiring developers, I was like, wow, these guys are amazing. I thought I was good and I spent a lot of time writing code and building products, but actually it turned out that that wasn't necessarily my best area of expertise. Likewise with, you know, customer sales and customer support, I'm not the best person at talking to customers. I'll hold my hands up and say that. So, you know, again, the first ever hire I made was actually someone to help me out on the customer services side of things, because again, you know, you're not focusing on, you know, customer service does take up a lot of time, and to provide good customer service and make sure you're on top of it, you know, you need someone to do that. And, you know, as I say, I think when I was kind of doing all that myself, I was just getting distracted from, you know, actually being able to grow the business and having that wider perspective on things.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that you totally hit the nail on the head with that advice, is just being really able to identify what you're good at and find ways to do more of it. And then also identify what you're not good at and find ways to delegate it. Because really, as an entrepreneur, founder, CEO, whatever you identify yourself as, you need to be able to focus on the activities that are directly bringing in more clients, customers, and money. So yeah. I think it's totally perfect advice that you gave there of just being able to find different ways to scale.
But I think also, you know, in the early days, when you're doing a bit of everything yourself, that's really valuable in itself because you can really figure out how the business works. And also, I think when I started, I didn't know really my strengths and weaknesses. I had to kind of go through that probably 4-year period where I was really on that self-discovery curve and figuring out what I was good at, what I wasn't. Now I know my strengths and weaknesses. And I think as soon as you can kind of figure that out, the better. But you don't feel, I mean, I think maybe I felt in the early days very pressured to try and sort of get everything perfect at once. And sometimes it does just take time. I think that's kind of the advice I would give to someone who was young, like in their early 20s, late teens, whatever it might be. You know, because I think just that period of life is quite weird in the sense that, you know, you're kind of growing up and you're sort of learning a lot about yourself. So I think, yeah, it's one of these things you can't necessarily go into it and say, I'm good at this, because it might turn out to be completely the other way around.
Yeah, it's kind of like you need to have a trial and error period to really figure out what you're good at, what you're not so good at, and also what you like doing. I mean, me personally, whenever I discover that I'm doing something I don't like, I'm like, oh, next time I delegate something, it is going to be that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think as well, like, growing a business can be fun. Obviously, it's a lot of hard work sometimes, but you should try and enjoy it as well. Because if you enjoy what you do, then you're more likely to work harder and kind of get better results, I think.
100%. So on the opposite end of that, what would you say was the most rewarding aspect of starting your business?
Oh, I think, a few things really. Obviously, I've always been the shallow reason, you know, I've always been very, very financially motivated. I think when your business gets to a stage where it's starting to make serious money, that's really exciting. On a less sort of shallow level, I actually think for me, the seeing customers get results and using your product, something that's literally you've crafted from nothing, you know, it's come from within your head and, you know, you've kind of crafted this solution or a product or a service. And then, you know, when you see people actually saying, oh, wow, this is really good and get gaining some kind of benefit from it, that does it for me. And also as well, a third sort of thing I really like is just people like hiring amazing staff and seeing them flourish. I think that's really rewarding as well.
Yeah, I think you listed all three great things there. And I totally agree with what you mentioned about the fact of hearing from clients and customers who are just absolutely loving the results that you're getting. Because one thing that I constantly tell myself being a service-based business owner is that I'm of service to people. What I offer is something that helps them. So you want to be able to connect with these people. And so being able to know and realize that you're directly benefiting the growth of someone else's business is incredibly humbling.
I completely agree. And it just, I think for me, it's fuel as well. I think when you build one service and people start using it and liking it, it, you know, encourages you to iterate and create new features or new functions. So, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but, you know, you touched on Matchmaker just before we started recording, you're saying, you know, you'd had some great results recording and meeting guests on there. But, you know, we've had so much great feedback and things that we didn't even consider when we were first starting out down that journey, that we're now thinking, right, okay, we need to do that. And we need to build this in, and we need to do that. So, you know, kind of, I think that evolution is quite exciting as well.
Yeah, totally. And it's kind of like the idea of if you feel like something is missing or you need something personally, more than likely other people are feeling the same exact way where they could use that same exact thing and are in need of it. So being able to identify those problems and struggles that people have and directly create products or services that help them and solve them is so amazing.
Absolutely.
James, what do you think led you to your success with your ventures?
Persistence. I think sometimes, you know, things don't always work as you want them to begin with. So you have to stick at them. Kind of being single-minded in what I do, trying to sort of not worry too much about, number one, what other people think of you. Because again, I remember like when I was back in school, people were like, what are you doing? This is really weird. I can't understand. Why don't you just go out and get a job? And actually I was like, nope, this is the right thing for me. And then also just constantly just having your eyes open to what's going on in the world around you, I think is useful as well.
I think that's a great point. That last one that you just mentioned is being able to kind of listen and acknowledge what people need and what they're really focused on, and then being able to find a way to provide that solution to it. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, totally. And you know, the other thing as well is you've got to reiterate sometimes. When I first started selling services to the radio industry, the product offering we had was very, very different to what we have now. So we've definitely evolved as a company. And we, you know, that's part of just being aware of what's going on in the industry and thinking, right, okay, well, we've been doing it like that for 10 years, time for a change. And sometimes there are companies that get stuck behind because they don't modernize themselves, they don't update their processes, they don't revise their product offering. So I think, yeah, being in tune with what's going on is really crucial.
Absolutely. And speaking of change, what would you say is the best way to help people identify when they need to change, just besides kind of what's going on in the world? And how's the best way to do that? Because I know that a lot of people, once they find a system that works, the idea of changing something in hopes of making it better can be really scary, but oftentimes change is what helps take us to that next level. So what would you say is your advice around change and really being able to adapt your business?
I think sometimes, you know, you make an interesting point when sometimes people don't like change, and that can include customers as well. You know, we've done overhauls to products before where, you know, immediately the feedback you get is negative because people are like, oh, why have you changed it? It's been the same for years. You know, why do I have to log into this new control panel? Or why have you redesigned your website or whatever it might be? So sometimes you're going to get some criticism. I think the main, you know, obviously you need to look at your KPIs. You know, how's your growth going in terms of, you know, if you suddenly see your business plateau, if you're a software as a service business like the ones I run, you know, we look to grow month on month. And if we see a period where we stop growing, we then start asking ourselves questions as to why. You know, do we need to update the website? Perhaps it's just kind of fatigued a bit. Do we need to be pushing more on content marketing? You know, are there certain avenues that we haven't explored in terms of customers that haven't found us yet? So I think you just need to be kind of in tune with different areas of the business. I think looking at growth is always important. But then also as well, sometimes, you know, the old expression, age old expression, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm kind of a fan of that, because there has been times over my career where I've thought, right, let's radically reinvent something. And actually it's just been a lot of waste of time. You know, you spend ages trying to re-engineer part of a system or try and change the way something works, and actually you end up rolling back to what you had before because people liked it. So it's kind of different for every business, I think, you know, but it's just again, I think it's just about being in tune with your customers more than anything.
Absolutely. And you made a great point there. It's kind of like a fine line where it's like you don't want to change something that is already working so well, but you also don't want to hold yourself back from improving something that really could benefit from having those improvements.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, again, when something's working, sometimes the temptation is to go off and do something different. I've done this before where I've had a business, it's been generating revenue. Probably in like 2013, I was like, I'm going to start another company. And really, it was just for the sake of it, because I just felt like I needed some sort of second venture. And, you know, I took a lot of time and focus away from my main venture. And obviously, that's kind of dangerous, because you need to make sure that, you know, you keep, if something's working, that you keep growing. If you start, you know, getting kind of shiny object syndrome. I mean, again, I remember when I was at university, there was a period where I used to register different domain names for different business ideas I had like every week. Yeah. And, which was great. But then, you know, you kind of end up like just going off on all these tangents. But if you've got one thing that starts working, that's really focus on that one thing. It can be really valuable.
I really want to highlight something you just said about those different ventures, because I feel like that's something that people will struggle with when they get to the point where they are launching a second or third venture, is making sure that they're not taking away from the first one that's bringing in more revenue, but also wanting to focus on the other second or third that's really passionate for them and something that they want to build up and grow. So what's your advice around that, around balancing all of these different ventures and making sure that you're still continuing to grow all of them rather than focusing on one more the other, so to say?
Well, my approach ever since, you know, 2013, when I was, I started this new business, I used the same team to create that product. Everyone was doing twice as much work. People didn't really know where to focus on. So my approach to this ever since has just been hiring a new team. If you want to build a new product or service, you know, you need additional pairs of hands to like not only create that product or service, but also then support it. So, you know, in the software business, I always make sure that, you know, each product we have has got its own development team. That means that you can keep the momentum up on each platform that you're running. As soon as you sort of say, right, okay, this development team's working on that product and also that product as well. Well, it's where do they prioritize? Where do they find the time to do both? So I think just making sure that you're resourced well is one strategy. And also for me, because obviously I'm kind of the one pulling the strings at the top, you know, the top, kind of giving the guidance and setting out the strategy. I think you've got to just go through periods, because sometimes it's quite difficult to focus on 2-3 things at once. So you sometimes have to go through a period where for maybe 6 or 8 months, you just focus primarily on one venture. And then 6 or 8 months later, you switch to kind of maybe something that's already working. Because again, you know, if you take too much focus or attention away from something, you can then lose that focus. And also that makes, sometimes it can kind of lose traction. So for example, with radio.co, because last year we were focusing so much on podcast.co, me and my kind of senior team, we noticed that I've just mentioned briefly before, we'd stopped growing. Our monthly recurring revenue didn't improve. And that was the first time in like 4 years that we'd ever had any kind of plateau. So we kind of, probably 4 months after it started to plateau, I was like, January this year, I was like, right, we really need to focus on this. We need to have another push, because obviously we've taken our eye off the ball here, which is fine for a little bit, but then you need to make sure that you kind of breathe new life into something. So we've done several things. We've started increasing our content marketing strategy again. We've just launched a reiteration of our website, kind of like updating it, sprucing it up, and you know, various other things internally as well, like in terms of our sales process, we've improved. So, you know, it's put it back on the trajectory that it was at before. But as I say, I think it was probably just because my focus for the year and a half prior to that had really been on launching and sort of building podcast.co.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you made a fantastic point about just being able to focus on one thing before you start to add in another, because personally, that's how I felt when I started this second venture with my marketing firm, Dash of Social. I had it for 3.5 years before I was finally like, okay, I'm ready to add in a second company. I'm ready to start diversifying and focusing on other passion projects. But that's only because I spent so much time building out my business, perfecting my processes, and really having all of my ducks in a row before I felt like I could take something else on. And I think that that's something important to keep in mind.
I think that's really important. You make a very valid point there. And also, you know, like you say, if you've given 3 years, something 3 years of your time, you focus on that and you get it to a certain level where you've got the processes in place and you've got the team to back it up, then you can, as a kind of founder or CEO, you can move away from that for a little bit. But I always think, you know, as well, you might find in a year or two's time, you need to kind of give it some more focus, give it some more TLC, because, you know, sometimes things can start slipping. So it's just kind of a balancing act, I think, when you get to this stage. But again, I think at the moment, you know, I've got these three different ventures. I think I would not be able to manage a fourth, quite honestly. Like at the moment, I think three is plenty, you know.
Yeah. And how do you manage your time with all three of those? Because that's one thing I'm always so intrigued to hear from serial entrepreneurs is like, for the people who have multiple ventures, how do they actually schedule their days and weeks to be able to give attention to all three and be able to put in as much time and effort as they can?
I think, you know, I have a good team behind me. So I have about 34 employees between all three brands. And, you know, that's a mix of sort of technical staff, so developers, and also sort of sales, marketing, et cetera, operations. So I think, you know, making sure that you have those teams in place is important. In terms of my personal schedule and diary, it really varies week on week. So I have a senior management team, so kind of a CTO, CMO, and a COO. They really probably dictate to some extent what I focus on, because quite often they'll come to me and they'll say, right, we need to pay attention to this, or I've got this problem, or how do we solve this issue? So, you know, it really, it just depends on what's going on at the time. And again, if we're working for, so for example, we've spent a lot of time over the past year working on one big deal for podcast.co, production client. And, you know, that obviously needed some attention for sort of on the build up to it. I went over and flew to New York and met with the company last June. And then when we were sort of structuring the deal, I had to have a lot of my attention. Now that deal's gone through and been signed, I don't need to give it as much of my attention, so I can focus on other things. But, you know, again, it's just about sort of having, I suppose, the relevant feedback loop from staff to, if there's problems, that you can actually spot them and identify them. And if it requires your input, then you can kind of jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I'm curious about too with your three ventures is that, do you find that it funnels people from one to the other? Like people might go from Matchmaker to podcast.co, or radio.co to podcast.co and all of that?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, again, it's partially deliberate. The way we've got these three companies, they kind of work really well in tandem. Matchmaker really has sprung out of podcast.co. Technically, it's kind of part of podcast.co. Radio obviously is its own market, but what we find is a lot of radio stations will also want podcasts. Not a lot of podcasters will want radio stations, but then we do also find Matchmaker is a great funnel for podcast.co. You know, we have lots of, say, guest experts who sign up. Maybe they haven't started their own podcast themselves. They maybe appeared on some other people's podcasts, but they're thinking about starting their own podcast. So of course, that's a really good way of getting them onto podcast.co, because, you know, immediately they've got that connection, that synergy with us.
Yeah. And I think that's awesome advice for anyone who's looking to add a second venture that's kind of like a complementary product or service to what they're already offering.
Yeah. I mean, everyone always says, you know, it's much easier to sell to your existing clients than it is to sell to new customers. So if you can have a product that maybe doesn't, it won't necessarily have to be like something that every single customer of yours wants, but if there's a certain portion or demographic of your customer base that it will really complement. You know, you'll immediately have some kind of raving fans from the get-go, because they'll have had a good experience in your existing business. And all you have to do is say, look, we've opened this up. If you're interested, you know, maybe here's a special offer or something to you know, for pre-existing clients. But it's a really good way of growing additional revenue streams, I think.
Absolutely. Mm. James, if there was one thing you wish you did differently or one thing you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be and why?
Like back when I was a student. I just chill out and calm down and stop rushing. I was very much just like wanted everything to happen all at once. And I still had a good time when I was a student, but I think it was kind of, I sometimes just took it all a bit too seriously, and I kind of wish I didn't. But then ultimately as well, I suppose, arguably if I hadn't done, maybe I wouldn't be in the position I'm in now. So I don't know, it's a tricky one to answer, but I definitely look back and think I was really like a bit too serious, a bit too intense at some stages.
Exactly what you said is exactly how I feel too, because really? When I started my company, I was also in college. And so I spent every waking moment that wasn't focused on school or other activities on my business. And so I kind of feel like it's that fine line where it's like, I spent so much time really focused on my business that I feel like it's why it grew to where it is today. But I also wish like, okay, I wish I took time for myself because work-life balance is important. But it's kind of like that tricky situation because you need that time to hustle and build something up, but you also need to be able to take a step back and relax when needed.
Yeah, I think, I sort of had a fairly good balance. Maybe I was like a little bit too focused on work at some stages, but I think there are people who literally will, work to the point where they don't have a social life, for example. And I think that's kind of dangerous because especially if you're going through college or university, you're only young once and you've got to enjoy that experience, that process as well. But then also I do think, if you build a business whilst you're at that age, it's really valuable because of course you don't have any outgoings. A lot of people get to like the late 20s or early 30s. And then by that stage, they might have, a mortgage and car payments or children, etc. And then of course it's like, if I want to start a business, I've got all this responsibility and all these outgoings, how can I do that? Whereas when you're kind of a student, there's that opportunity where, you've got your student loan. If things don't work out, perhaps it's not the end of the world. So I think at the same time, it is quite a good, like a golden period where you can start a business.
Yeah, you led perfectly into my next question because that was exactly what I was going to ask was why it's so important to start a business at a young age. And you said it perfectly. I mean, as you get older, you get more responsibilities and things you have to pay for and focus on and stuff like that. And so being able to start a business while young just kind of gives you more of an opportunity because you don't have so much on your plate that you really need to be mindful of.
Yeah, I think so. And also, there's a degree of sort of fearlessness, which is really useful when you start a business. Like, I think it can be, there's a fine line between sort of being over cocky and confident and having that kind of quiet inner confidence, I think, which is probably what I had. I wasn't like planning on taking over the world when I was 19, 20 and starting things out. But I certainly wanted to, I certainly had that drive, which I wanted to become successful. And I knew I wanted to, earn some good money from what I was doing. So I think, having that sort of fearlessness can kind of help you achieve what you want.
Yeah. And it helps you to really step out of your comfort zone because when you step out of your comfort zone, that's when the results happen.
Completely. Yeah.
James, what's the last piece of advice you'd like to leave with our listeners for someone who may just be starting?
I mean, I think I'm going to give us a shameless plug now. I think, if you're looking to have conversations with really interesting people, podcasting is a good thing to dip your toes in. It's a great way also of validating ideas. So, if you are thinking about starting a business, get on some podcasts, talk about what you're going to be doing. There's plenty of podcasts out there where they, discuss or tear apart startup ideas, that sort of stuff. So it's always good to listen to podcasts as well. I think you can learn a lot from them. And also just go for it. I think there's too many people who just will think about starting a podcast or starting a business for a long time. But just actually taking that first step to just dive right in. And, you can kind of fake it till you make it to a certain extent. I think if you have a confident idea of what you want to achieve, but perhaps you can't do everything yourself, you can always find other people who can help you out and get things done until you're at a position where, either you understand it fully yourself or, you can hire staff to sort of do that for you. Because that's what I did when I first started. I didn't understand anything about like setting up servers or the techie side of stuff. But I kind of set this website up selling service and I found someone else who would help me with that side of things until I actually figured all that stuff out myself.
Yeah, and that's really important too, is just being able to surround yourself with people who know more than you do and being able to have the ability to help you take your business to that next level because of their skills, expertise, and talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's good advice.
Absolutely. Well, James, this has been such an awesome podcast. I love all the advice that you shared, and I know our listeners will feel the same way. And now I'd love if you could share where they can find you in case they'd like to get in touch with you further.
Absolutely. So if you want to connect with me on social media, if you go to jamesm.com/connect, that's jamesm.com/connect. All the social details are on there.
Perfect. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. That way, if anyone missed it, they can click through and go from there.
Perfect. Thanks very much for having me on, Ashley.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, James. Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love it if you could subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with those who could use it most. For show notes and more information, go to studenttoceo.com/podcast.